Are you ready to step into your power? If so, I want to tell you about my brand new one-to-one mentorship program, Powerhouse. Power stands for productivity, organization, wealth, energy, and relationships. The five things that I teach my clients to help them step into their fullest potential. So if you are tired of playing small, ready for change, and want to excel in these five areas, go to jenniferfordberry.com and sign up for a free application call to see if you are ready to be a powerhouse.
Welcome to the Make Room Show, formerly titled The 29-Minute Mom. I am your host, Jennifer Fordberry, certified professional organizer, best-selling author, and coach. I've spent the last two decades teaching women how to get organized so that they can free up more space, time, energy, and money. This podcast is for the woman who wants to make room in her home and in her life for the people and the things that matter the most. Each week, I am bringing you episodes that will help you feel less overwhelmed and more inspired to create the life that you deserve. So come on, girl, let's do this together.
Testing 1, 2, 3. Thanks again for joining me for another episode of the Make Room Show. And today we are going to be talking about making room for your money. I love talking about money. So today I'm going to have a very special guest, Michaelanne Valterra, who is an author, speaker, master money coach, who helps women around the world rise above the money fog, transform their relationship with money, and design their ideal life. So welcome to the show, Michaelanne.
Jennifer, I'm so jazzed to be here. Thank you.
Thanks for coming. So I love talking about money just because in my line of work, I am literally shocked at how many women I have worked with that want to get their life organized or their business organized or their time organized, and they have no idea where their money is going. And so it's been one of those surprises to me over the past couple of decades of coaching women where many of them don't have a budget, which surprises me, or their husbands take care of all the money. And so they're kind of left in the dark. So I'm really excited. You have a brand new book out that can help women educate themselves on money. Yeah. And it is a cute little book, Rise Above the Money Fog. And I've been reading it every morning with my coffee by my Christmas tree. And it's just like an easy, quick read that will empower you to want to look at your money. Because I find that when it's scary or you're not sure where it's going, you kind of avoid it. So great job on the book.
So, Jess, well, and as you know, reading it, you know, I wrote it about these four women and their stories of rising above the money fog. It's like, it's got to be real. It's got to be personal because, like you said, we're all dealing with this, but it's this thing that doesn't even have a name for many of us. So I'm so happy you're enjoying it.
Yes, I love it. So first of all, tell me, how long have you been coaching?
25 years.
Yay.
Can you believe that? I've been a money coach longer than people have known that money coaching even exists.
I can see that being real. I mean, I've been doing coaching about organizing longer than people have known that what even a coach about organization is too. So I totally get it. So good job for you, because coaching was not really a thing 25 years ago. So that tells
me it wasn't
a lot. Yeah. What made you get into this type of coaching?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, my undergrad was in economics, which obviously sounds pretty dry. And I got to say, it kind of is, although I was fascinated with money. But then I got a master's in psychology. And it's like, talk about two different fields, you know, money and psychology. And I debated for a long time what I wanted to do when I grew up. I met an amazing woman who's basically the pioneer in the field of money coaching. But again, that term wasn't even hardly used 25 years ago. Her name was Karen McCall. And I thought, oh my God, here's someone talking about the psychology of money. Put it all together, right? The emotional side, the practical side, deprivation issues, and how when we're deprived in childhood, how that comes out in our adult relationship to money. I mean, just juicy, interesting stuff. And I thought, this is the field. I want to help people with both sides, you know, the practical and the emotional. That the thing that was the problem that you, you know, you brought up 25 years ago, coaching in general didn't really exist, right? I mean, I became a financial recovery counselor and over the years became more of a quote coach, but I was coaching before coaching was a thing, right?
Yeah.
So it's been an interesting journey now after 25 years, but I literally specialize in working with women in midlife who want to rise above the money fog. And, you know, there's a lot of emotion in this topic and there's a lot of practical stuff too. There's so much that we can do. And it's not all about investing in taxes. I think people have this sense that money is about these very, very particular topics.
Mm-hmm.
That's in there. I mean, those are specialty topics for sure. But the much bigger picture is much, much broader and juicier than that.
Yes. I have to say that one of the things I loved when I first started the book was literally on page 19 when it says, money is a sacred power. You want to use this power to live your best life. Mm. That gets me excited to learn more about money. When you think about it as a sacred power, because it also, you know, it's just, it's not, you say even before that, that money can help us live our dreams, deeply enjoy our life, take care of our children, secure our future and donate to causes that touch our heart. This is the power of money. It's not really about the things we can buy as much as it is about freedom and doing life the way we want to do it on our terms. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Oh my God, that's so well said. Oh, wait, I wrote that. Yeah, no, it's so, it's so true. I mean, you know, women don't get excited about counting our money. It's not quite the game for women, the game of how much can I make and how much can I stockpile and how much will I have. Men tend to gamify money a little bit more than women do. You know, for us, it's very much what you were reading. It's what can we do with this?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, my mission is to help women remove money as an impediment to finding their purpose in life.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do we find it and how do we follow it? And when we're in a money fog, it's hard to find our mission. It's hard to, if we find it, then follow it because mm-hmm. we're in this fog that keeps us. You know, I mean that, well, actually, let me back up. You know, the money fog is when we feel fuzzy about money, when we're vague about our finances, when we feel fearful, when we feel overwhelmed around money, when we feel guilty, sometimes about what we spend or guilty about perhaps what we don't have. So fearful, overwhelmed, and guilt are why I called the book Fog, F-O-G. That's kind mm-hmm. of the fun part about, you know, mm-hmm. F-O-G. That's
I love a good acronym.
I know. Who doesn't,
I
right?
I love it.
That's just like totally stirs me up. So you know, but it really gets to when we're not clear about our money, it's not just about we don't know exactly how much we spend. That's certainly a form of money fog. But it's also all the feelings that we have. And when people are usually stress and anxiety, right?
Yeah.
And when people are in that place of stress and anxiety around money, their vision dims. It's like driving a car in a fog. It's very similar feeling in that when you're in a real heavy fog and we've all, you know, I went to grad school down in San Francisco and Daly City is right. It's the city where San Francisco Airport is, SFO. SFO is the most fogged in airport, I swear to God, in the entire United States. We're all delayed constantly going into San Francisco. And so when you're in a car on the ground driving in that area, the fog is so heavy that you drive really, really slow. And when we're in a money fog, it's the same thing. We're driving really slow because we're afraid we're going to hit something. All our energy is going towards stay on the road, don't hit something. And so there's no vision. we're not looking further ahead with what do we want to do with our life? What do we want to be? We're just trying to survive because we feel so foggy.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I love that. I find that this FOG acronym can pertain to so many areas in life, really. As soon as we feel those three feelings, we just want to kind of like step back, get away from it. It's too uncomfortable. We don't want to dive in. And so this makes perfect sense.
And hide under the bed, hide under the blankets.
And that actually it also takes away our energy, right? We feel depleted. I feel like that leads me to one of my important questions. It's just how, when you get into this money fog, isn't that when the scarcity mindset really starts to set in compared to an abundant mindset?
Yeah. Well, that's a really interesting question. This is such an interesting question. So it depends on your personality. Mm-hmm. For some people, when they're in a money fog, it actually causes them to overspend, overdo. We don't know what we need, but maybe it's fine. And so let's just go for it. And we kind of know it's not working. Anxiety, free floating anxiety usually ends up with a lot of debt. For the other half of us, when we're in a money fog, we under earn and undersell ourselves. And we go into very much exactly what you were just saying, batten down the hatches. Like, oh my gosh, I don't know. I don't know what I need. I'm not sure how much I need to spend. I don't know what expenses are coming. It always feels like there's something, right? And so we just batten down the hatches.
Mm-hmm.
We literally go into scarcity. And it's a huge reaction. There are times when people do both, right? We batten down the hatches, undersell ourselves and overspend. and then we got double trouble, right? But a lot of people tend to veer towards one or the other, depending a little bit on kind of their psychological makeup.
Yeah. I find too that it's really, and I talk to a lot of women that are in business. So when they have that scarcity mindset, that's when, and you talk about it in the book about how this relates to creativity. So when you're in a scarcity mindset, you're not as creative and you're not as energetic about going out and working for that money. So I think it's just interesting. When you say in here, when you're unclear about money, this fog causes confusion, frustration, and bewilderment. You work hard, give it your best effort, and have a variety of unconscious reactions to the fog, but you're past, present, and future remain obscured.
Right.
So powerful. You know, it's like, and you say you live day to day with little or no visibility. So when you're in the fog, you really, you feel like you can't see beyond it, right? It's just like a real fog. Like you said, at the airport, you can only see so far. So you feel like that fog's going to last forever. What do you say to women that are listening that feel like, hey, this is me right now. I feel like I'm in a money fog and I want to get out of it.
Well, so part of what's interesting and part of why it's so helpful to talk about driving in the fog, because we've all had that experience, right? Like in Daly City, again, it was so thick. There was literally a stop sign, blinking red light telling you that a blinking stop sign was coming. Like that's how thick the fog was. So we had to drive so slow to avoid, driving off the road. When we drive out of a fog is often when we realize just how thick it really was, because you also kind of get used to it, right? So many of us are in a money fog, and you and I are really highlighting this partly to really help people understand that you might be in something you're not actually fully even aware of. Mm-hmm. We don't often know we're in a money fog except by us talking about it and looking at the impacts. So for example, if you are feeling, fearful, overwhelmed, and stressed out about money, it could be because you're in a money fog. If you have credit card debt, it could be because you're in a money fog. If you're underselling yourself, not making enough money, that could be because you're in a money fog. So part of it is understanding what are the signposts that might be indicating, wait a minute, I haven't named this thing because it's just sort of the air that I breathe, right? Mm-hmm. Once we drive out of the fog, we go, oh my God, I had no idea I was in it. Look how clear and beautiful it is. So I think it's helpful to hear, because we tend to heap, particularly as women, so much shame and blame on ourselves. And we're just living our lives, mm-hmm. right? I mean, we're all doing the best that we can without realizing maybe there's something going on that has a name that's bigger than what I realize. Like if you're not making enough money, just that example around scarcity, it could be because you are caught up in a money fog, and a money fog, you know, means that you don't know how much money you need to make and really, you know, really, really tamps down your vision. So part of it is naming it. Mm-hmm. And then knowing that, because it's so powerful to name something, because when you name an issue, whatever it is, whether it's, oh my gosh, I'm suffering from clutteritis, I didn't know, you know, or I mean, there's so many different issues out there that when we name them, it's super powerful. Mm-hmm. Because naming says, okay, I can have power over this. I can arise from the money fog, but you can't solve something that you don't even know is happening.
Right. So if they start to listen to this episode and they're thinking, that's me right now, I'm in a money fog, which I have to guess, Michael Ann, that there's a lot of people feeling this way right now with the state of the economy. I don't know if I've ever had so many money conversations as I have in the last 6 months with people, truly, and have heard a lot of women's fears. And I've seen both. I've seen some that are burying their heads in the sand. They have no idea where their money's going, and others that are batting down the hatches. And right. I feel like, I mean, have you noticed that it's pretty prevalent right now?
Absolutely. And I think that the question is, you're asking is, so what do we do about it? If people say, I'm in it, I get it, help me, right?
Yeah. So what's like tangible steps that they can start to do?
Right. So the I'll just say that the super, super big picture is the goal is to get really clear about money. The ultimate goal is to know what we spend, what we earn, and to really come into balance around knowing this. Mm-hmm. Now, I say that is the ultimate goal because as soon as I say that, people dive back under the bed. They're like, oh my God, thank you so much. Oh, I didn't know that, you know, that's so overwhelming. And so one entry into that is, how can we go into beautifying your finances, and how can we really go into this, what I call elegant simplicity around money? Because what I find is people are very, very complicated around money, and it's one of the things that induces the money fog. So for example, super practical, super brass tacks. A lot of people I talk to have too many accounts. Yes. They've got too many credit cards. They've got, you know, like, let's pretend they've got 5 credit cards, 3 checking accounts, 4 savings accounts. I call it account proliferation. And it happens for lots of reasons. You know, sometimes their accounts left over from a relationship we're no longer in. Part of it is online banking right now has made it too easy. Mm-hmm. It's like, open an account and I'll give you a free set of steak knives, you know. and part of it is we're doing the best we can. And so some people think if they have an account, it's a form of bucketing, right? Okay, yes. Well, that account I'll use just for vacation, that type of thing. But what we know is the more accounts people have, the more it's correlated to stress and anxiety around money and the higher level of money fog people are in. And so what I recommend is a great place to start is pruning your accounts and having 1 primary checking account, maximum 2 credit cards, really focusing on only using 1 credit card with the second one as a backup, you know, if something happens. Mm-hmm. And then 2 savings accounts. And when we can get into like what savings accounts are for what, right? But that is truly, truly that elegant financial simplicity that we want, because what I know is when people have 1 primary checking account and use 1 primary credit card, like that's it, right? 1 checking, 1 credit card, that's it. Those are the people that report being the most peaceful around money, the least stressed around money. And it's not correlated to how much money they make, although the higher earning you go, the more often simple their primary finances are. Because the other piece is it takes a lot of time to monitor a lot of accounts.
It does. And it becomes clutter.
It's financial clutter, which I know you of all people totally get, right?
Yes. It's just like physical clutter. You're having to look in more places to find the same like item. So it's just like when I say, put like your like items together in your physical space. That's because it takes time to find what you need when you need it. And now I'm not looking in five locations. I only look in one. And it's the same with this. So I totally agree.
It's why I call it beautifying your money, you know, because we want our money life to be as restfully beautiful to us as when we walk into our homes.
Yes.
You know, when you log on online, you want to just see your accounts right there, have them have very clear, beautiful names to you. You know, that's called a nickname in most online banking. And there you go. There you go. Because we use a lot of multiple accounts to, in the end, distract us.
Yes.
From what's really important.
That is so true. I love that. It's very, very true. And so what would be the two savings accounts in your opinion?
So one savings account I use for upcoming large periodic expenses. Mm-hmm. So it is a way to regulate our cash flow instead of using a credit card to regulate our cash flow.
Yes.
A lot of people are in a lot of pain with credit cards. And ultimately, we only want them to be a payment convenience mechanism. That's it.
Yes.
Get your points, get
Can
your
you
travel.
Say that one more time. There might be a cut from this.
There is a lot of pain out there around credit cards. And we really only want credit cards to be a payment mechanism. That's it. It's just a convenience mechanism. And you know, all the consumer protection and we want to get the travel points. I'm not against that at all, as long as it's all on one credit card.
Yes. Okay.
But credit cards are not to be used for, that's how I can afford the couch. That's how I can afford the trip.
Right.
That's the function of savings. And so what I call periodic savings is when we save every month for upcoming large expenses that are not our monthly expenses. So that would be like your vacations, that would be quarterly taxes, you know, for those of us that are self-employed, that could be your property taxes if they're not inside your mortgage, that's the water heater that blows up, that's the car repair, you know. So saving in a periodic savings account, you're saving for expenses that are periodic.
Yes.
Not fixed, that are monthly, monthly, monthly.
Right.
If we spent the same amount of money every month, money coaches probably wouldn't exist. Money would be easy. We spend the exact same amount every month. There would be different issues with how much we need to make, right?
Yeah.
But that savings is the single most important savings there is saving for upcoming expenses. It simply assures you can always pay your credit card off in full at the end of the month, right? But that savings is the most important. The other savings account is a safety net account. And that is the one that people have heard protects us if something happens to our income, right? And, you know, if you think about it, one account protects us around expenses. One account protects us around income. They're very, very different functions. And your safety net, which I personally prefer to call your freedom fund, is where we have that good old 3 months of living expenses saved up so that if something happens to our work, if something happens to our retirement income streams, depending on where you are in your life, if something happens where the child support gets interrupted, then, you know, the classic example is you leave your job, you're okay. You've got that money to live on while your next thing is coming. But I prefer, Jennifer, to call it a freedom fund because you want to be, it's the money that is, I work by choice. If I choose to take some time off, I choose that. And that's when you activate your freedom fund. If I choose to go meditate in Tibet for 2 months because I need that for my self-care, then I will activate my safety net because it's designed to cover income. So those are the two savings accounts.
Yes, I love that. So talk a little bit about strategy where I've seen a lot of my clients, they'll have like a credit card balance, but then they'll have a savings account balance, or maybe a home equity line. And they're always letting they want to keep that safety net, but they'll rack up the credit card. You know what I'm saying? So it's
look
at the interest rates, you're like, well, this credit card is, 23.9% or something like that, but they don't want to take away the savings to pay off the credit card. What's your advice?
Oh my God. You just nailed one of the big problems. Yeah. So, my colleague, Karen McCall, talks a lot about this over the years. She calls it saving your way out of debt. This concept that I'm going to talk about.
Yeah.
That is so not understood. What you're talking about keeps professionals in the debt cycle literally for decades, that they have credit card debt. And then it's kind of like, here's a classic example. Somebody dies. I'm sorry, I'll use this example, but Uncle Bob dies at 92 and suddenly you inherit $10,000. And the question is, should I save the $10,000 or should I put the $10,000 to wipe out my $10,000 credit card bill? Right. Just to kind of simplify it. Right.
Yeah.
Well, so if you take people assume like, of course, you pay off the credit card. It's got this interest rate, blah, blah, blah. OK, that is the wrong answer, because if you take that $10,000 and pay off your $10,000 in credit card debt, OK, you're now debt free for, at least a couple weeks. Right. But eventually something's going to happen. Right. Eventually the car will blow up. Eventually you're going to want to go to Hawaii on vacation. Eventually one of those periodic expenses that I talked about is going to happen. And then you're going to go right back into credit card debt. So, when money comes in out of the blue, not exactly what you were saying, but I'll just throw this fun concept out. I always recommend that people pay a third to the past, present, and future. If you have that $10,000 that comes in, pay a third to the past and put it on your debt. Pay a third to the present and get some needs met that you're deprived on right now. Pay a third to the future and put it in savings.
So one third for each.
Yeah, exactly. But the idea that you're really bringing up is, we have to have a more balanced view around savings. When we don't save for all of these darn expenses, we just end up putting them on a credit card and we have no way to pay them off. So it's better to pay off a debt credit card slower and save for the next large expense, because life is lifing along. I guarantee you something's going to happen. So if you had $500 a month extra to put towards debt, I would advocate that you put $250 on debt and $250 in savings. That sounds like a little bit of a simple example, but it means that not putting money into savings keeps us locked in the debt cycle. It's more important to build in your periodic savings to prevent future debt and to slow pay off the current debt, because the point is breaking the debt cycle permanently, not getting out of debt right now and then just going back in here.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So one of the other things I wanted to talk to you about actually was on page 85. And it says, a spending plan is designed to give you a sense of control and put you in the driver's seat. This is why it takes you from feeling overwhelmed about money to feeling confident and in control. It allows you to creatively design or redesign your present life and get excited about your future life. I think that when you said putting it into thirds, you can't just feel guilty or feel foggy about the past. We want to get excited about the future, because when we get excited about the future, that makes us want to look at our money even more, right? When we become visionaries and we have plans and we are like, this is exactly what I'm saving for. This is exactly why I want to pay off debt. Like, because I want to do this, this, and this. So talk to us about that part. How do we go from being in this fog to getting excited about life?
Well,
we feel the weight of it. We're still feeling that weight of the fog, right?
Right. Yeah. So the way out is this life-giving, nourishing spending plan process. I mean, you nailed it. That's exactly the key. I personally hate the word budget, and it's a little bit personality based. Not everybody hates it, but it's very, it can sound like a diet. Like, who do I owe? What's left over for me?
I never thought of that. It does.
Yeah, it's very diety. Versus a spending plan is, listen, it's my life. I want to plan where I want to spend my money. And one of the reasons that I think people don't get excited about talking about money is so much of the conversation out there is about either debt or retirement savings and investing. And if you think about it, debt's about the past. Retirement savings and investing is about the future. Mm-hmm. We don't live in either of those places. We live here in the present. And so a spending plan is about, let's design the life that you want. Yes, we're going to honor the past. Yes, we're going to honor the future. 100% very important, but you're the most important thing of all. And so how do you create this, you know, so we start with the month. How do we create this wonderful, nourishing plan for you where you're literally planning where you want your money to go? And we're absolutely lining it up with, and what does that mean you need to make? And where's the money coming from? I mean, we are looking for balance. Then we build to my favorite thing of all, which is an annual income and spending plan, where we're designing your whole life. We're looking at the whole year and the life that you want. And we need to make sure that your needs are front and center. Your self-care is taken care of. You know, where are your dreams and visions and hobbies? How do we protect what's important to you? And I think people have a fear that if they get into looking at money at this level, that just to name the fear, I'm afraid I won't be able to afford what I really want. Mm-hmm. Like that's where it comes. I'm afraid there won't be money for me to take up horseback riding. And that's what I really want. Mm-hmm. But if we name what you really want, we put that in the middle center of the plan and we build the plan around that. It doesn't mean that we don't have to get creative about making it happen. But man, there are few people more creative than women in midlife that are willing to like, you know what? I'm creative.
Yes.
This is important to me, yes. Right? And if it means I need to wait on the brand new couch, so be it. Let me see how it all works out so I can be the decider.
Yes.
So empowering. I can look at it.
So empowering, really, to look at that in a refreshing approach, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I'm with you. I mean, like I said, I've been doing this for so many years. And I think that it is that kind of past and future that really is so not engaging because we don't live there, you know.
Yeah.
It's so exciting to create a plan that gives me more of what I want and need and what I'm creating. You know, I don't teach and coach my clients anything I don't personally use. And I've used it to create the life of my dreams. And it's by just staying in this process.
Yes, I love it. It's interesting too, when you talk about the fact, you know, we're both coaches, so we have a lot of conversations with potential clients. And it's very common to talk to women, I'm sure you feel the same way, where they want a change. They can't get the change on their own. They need to work with an expert and they need to be walked through a process. And that process is an investment in themselves, but they will put themselves last and everybody else first. And so they'll be stuck. You can't get to the dream. You can't get to the new purpose or the new vision until you invest in yourself. But they're afraid, right? They're afraid. Like, well, who am I to spend this money on an expert or a coach or a mentor, even if it means in 6 months I could get to the place I've been dreaming of going?
Oh my gosh, that's so true. And you know, I think part of it is you hit midlife, we have spent a lifetime helping, serving, supporting other people, you know, whether it's our children or community or spouses or, you know, our great loves. But it is our time now. And if we don't put ourselves front and center, honestly, I think that the rest of the world won't do as well because we are so powerful that when we take care of ourselves like this, everybody benefits. But it is a shift in mindset to be able to give us that self-care. And you know, are there true do-it-yourselfers out there, people that truly don't need any help, support, accountability? You know, of course, yes, but that's a pretty small minority of people, right?
Yes.
Most of us do better with help and support.
Absolutely. And we all have those areas that are our natural gifts where we thrive. And then there's the areas where we want to excel at and we need the extra help. It doesn't matter who we are. But I find that one of the things that's the most interesting to me is that if each of us as women were willing to invest in ourselves and align ourselves with our purpose, then, because a true purpose is not about us. You know, it's, we were sent here with a specific package that is ourself to share with the world. So for me, I believe when you're really walking your purpose, the purpose is to help other people with those skills and gifts. Right. So if we were all doing this, can you imagine what the world would be like?
It's huge, you know, and if you take what stands in people's way would be clutter, would be disorganization, would be, you know, in my case, money fog. When we remove these impediments, when we remove these barriers, then people do see their vision and their purpose, and the whole world is better for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So for those women that were listening to the show today and were like, yes, this is me, I want you to grab this book. So get a good look at the cover. It's super cute.
I love that cover. Yeah.
It's an easy read. This is something that when you're done reading, you can put this down and just feel like, yes, I can do this. Like you really do. You make this so empowering.
And the book was only 100 pages or 110 or something like that, you know, and it was a mission to write a short, engaging book, you know, let me tell you, it was like, sometimes I think it's easier to write a longer book than a shorter book, but it was designed exactly for that, so that you could have that cup of tea, enjoy reading it in the afternoon, get some juice, not have to spend weeks and weeks on it. So I'm just so glad you enjoyed it.
I loved it. So final question for you is, when we get away from this money fog, which is the goal, right? If you've been paying attention to the show, how does rising above the money fog lead us to our dream life?
When you are clear, it's very much what we just said. When you have risen above the money fog, your life purpose and mission literally rise right before your eyes, right before your eyes. And so all things become possible. You go from not seeing your mission and your desires to not only seeing them, but it's like coming out of the money fog gives you a superpower that gives you the skill set to follow your dreams. And it also could be just follow your passions. Yes. I mean, everyone's going to resonate with a different word, but you know, for me, one of my passions was dancing Argentine tango. And, you know, if I was in a money fog, that would be a harder passion to follow with all of its related complexity, you know? So whatever the passion is, the money fog blocks us from both seeing it and following it. And so that's the gift of allowing ourselves to rise above the money fog. We both see our missions and our passions, and then we've got the power to follow them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I love that. Well, thank you so much for your time, Michael Ann. I truly appreciate it. Congratulations on your newest book. You know, I pray that it's a huge success for you. It's a strong message that women need to hear.
I so appreciate it. Yeah. So it's called Rise Above the Money Fog. People can grab it literally from riseabovethemoneyfog.com, or they can grab it on Amazon. And if people are curious to talk to me, they can find me at Seattle Money Coach. I work with women all over the United States, and I just love, love, love helping people rise above the money fog.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for everyone that is out there listening to the Make Room Show. And if you love this episode, be sure to share it, leave us a review, leave us a comment, and reach out to Michael Ann and grab a copy of her book. Once again, Rise Above the Money Fog. Grab it where books are sold, and we'll see you back here next week.